We're going to discuss happiness tonight. And how can it be that our sages say, be happy in the month of Adar? Well, how do you tell a person to be happy? And what am I supposed to be so happy about? Let's ask ourselves a few questions in our quest for happiness and understanding what we're looking for. Where does happiness come from? Where does sadness come from? And I think that there are many answers, but there's one answer, which breaks into two, which is what we'll think about today. In the Garden of Eden, were they all happy? They had all the food in the world. They had, things were going well. And then along comes the Nachash, the serpent, and says, he says a line, which we will analyze a little bit later. He says a line, and he gets them to do what they shouldn't have done. And now suddenly they're worried. God appears, and instead of the connection they had beforehand, they're hiding. We suddenly encounter fear. And we have a rule that when words appear in Tanakh, we often look for where's the first time they appear, reveal something about the word. So instead of connecting to God, suddenly they're hiding from God. Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava. And we have a conversation in which they try to run away from responsibility. And and at the end, we have an outcome, which is man will die, woman will die, there will be hatred between man, woman, and the snake, the woman will suffer in childbirth and in her relationships, and the man will suffer in making a living, and the world begins. And it certainly sounds like sadness begins also. Be'etzev teledi banim. Where does the word sadness first appear? A woman is told, you will give birth, be'etzev, with pain, yeah? Oh, wow. So, I want us to look for a second at what happened here from a different perspective. Our sages say, where do we know about Haman from? Where does Haman appear in the Torah? Chazal say, when the snake turned to Chava, to Eve, he said to her, "Hamin ha'etz asher tziviticha." I'm sorry, when Hashem spoke to Adam, he asked him, did you eat from the forbidden fruit? So he said, "Hamin ha'etz asher tziviticha l'viticha l'meno achalta." Have you eaten from the tree I forbidden you? Oh, Haman, Hamin, that's the connection. Okay, what were our sages telling us? So let's go review our story. What does it take to be happy? Well, let's imagine that you owned your house. Not only you owned your house, you owned your neighbor's house. And not only you owned your house and your neighbor's house, you owned a city. So you had a lot of rent coming in. And you owned a few armies. And you had quite a few children. And your children were quite successful all over the world. And you had your children in key positions politically all over the world. And you had treasure houses filled with gold and silver. But is there someone more wealthy than you? No. You're the most wealthy person. Is there one person who's more powerful than you? Yeah, he's the king, but he listens to whatever you say. And he's basically said, you could do whatever you want. And he's told you, here, you have full access to my kingdom. Could you be happy? I'm asking a question. You had all this power, all this wealth, all this success. You were close to your children. They're there to advise you. They're there to think with you. They're there to plot with you. You make game plans together. You execute things together. You coordinate with your kids. could you be happy? I'm saying, is it possible to be happy in such a scenario? Could you be sad?
Also.
How could you be sad? What's wrong? What are you lacking in life? What? I'm asking, what's missing? Why? What do you need to be happy? What does it take to be happy? I'm saying, what else could you ask for? You have health, you have wealth, you have brilliance, you have admiration. Let's add one. You tell everyone, I'm God, bow to me, and they believe you. They start bowing. You want to make it one better? You want to know one better?
Yeah, go ahead.
No.
Better than God. Yeah, what's going to be the next thing?
We'll leave the next one out for a minute. Could you be upset? Could you be sad? What could stand in your way? You have everything. So I am describing someone in this description. Someone you know. Someone you've heard of. Someone very famous. His name is Haman. Haman has everything. He's the wealthiest person on the planet. King Ahasuerus is king only in name. He's given him the ring. You could make any decree you want. He has many, many children in key political positions all over the world. And his children are coordinating with him. They're making plans and plots with him. He has millions. He owns whole territories, swaths of territories. He has commonwealths. He has taxes coming in. He has mansions. It says he had a belt, that on his belt he had engraved all the different assets and storage houses he had. He could always take out his belt and start reading off. I have 50 million on this island. 40 million coming in from that. He had all his accounting on his belt. He could, you know, big numbers, but he was super, super wealthy. He had fame, wealth, power. It says Ahasuerus had nobles. Haman would draw lots, and based on which noble he drew, Haman would violate, if you understand what I mean, on that day. That was, so it wasn't only he was like God, right? Everyone bowed to him, but he had the power to violate any man or woman he chose. So Haman is walking around the superpower of the world, okay? And nothing can stand in his way. And then he's walking out of the king's palace feeling very, very good about himself. The queen invited him to the meal, and he sees Mordechai. And Mordechai sitting there. And Mordechai doesn't bow to him. And Mordechai doesn't spit at him. Mordechai doesn't do anything. Vilo kam, he didn't stand up. Vilo za, he didn't shake. He didn't tremble. Mimenu. Wait a second. Haman just walked in. And Mordechai doesn't flinch. Haman gets upset. Wait a second. How come Mordechai is not bowing to me? How come Mordechai doesn't respect me? So initially everyone's bowing to Haman, and then there's one Jew that won't bow to him. So Haman runs to Ahasuerus and he says, I just want to coordinate here. You don't have a problem if I make this decree about this nation. They're a thorn in our side anyways. They don't mix with other people. They always have excuses for taxes. They have excuses not to work. They have so many holidays. You don't mind if I annihilate them. Ahasuerus says, great idea. I'm all for it. Let's have a drink. And they sit down to have a drink over this. Haman says, I'll give you a lot of money. And Ahasuerus says, don't bother with the money. Have a good time. It's fine. Kill the Jews. And then, so Haman has his decree. Everything's arranged. There was one Jew who bothered him. He's going to get rid of all of them. And then he's walking out of the party, and that one Jew who didn't bow to him in the beginning is sitting there, and he doesn't budge. He doesn't get up. He doesn't bow. He doesn't flinch. He doesn't even seem scared. Viloza. He's not scared. How are you not scared? I just made a decree. All the Jews are dying. My decree, Haman. Haman looks at Mordechai. You're not scared. What's wrong with you? I don't mean anything to you. What do you mean I don't mean anything to you? But Haman, you mean something to the whole world. Everyone looks up to you. Everyone's scared of you, Haman. Right? But there's one Jew who isn't. Oh no, he runs home. He summons all his advisors. He summons his wife. He says, what do we do? What does Haman say? And here we see a key line of Haman's. He takes off his belt and he starts saying to them, you see how much money I have? You see how much gold I have? You see how many tons of gold? How many tons of silver? How many tons of copper? How much grain? How many fields? How many manors? How many castles? How much rent? How many soldiers? And he's enumerating. He's going down and down and down and down his belt. And he's giving all these big numbers. And then he says, see all this? All of this means nothing to me. V'chol zeh einenu shoveh li. All of this doesn't mean anything to me. Whenever I see Mordechai sitting there, all this means nothing to me. Haman, what's wrong with you? Haman, wait a second. Did you understand what you just said? Nothing. So they tell him, okay, make a plot to hang Mordechai on a tree tomorrow. You'll come into the meal happy. So Haman doesn't go to sleep that night. It's very important. He erects this tall tree. Why does he have to erect such high gallows? Why is that so important? Hamishim Ama.
Takes the wood from his house, right?
One medrash. Takes a plank from his own house. Why? So important. Everyone's got to see Mordechai hanging. Okay, let's pause our story for a second. Now let's go back. Adam and Chava are in the Garden of Eden. What does the serpent say to Chava? Hi, how are you? I hear you guys don't get to eat anything good around here. Afki amar Elohim, lo tochilu mikol etz hagan. The serpent says, I hear God says, you're not allowed to eat from anything here in the Garden of Eden. So Eve says, no, life's good over here. Mipiri etz hagan nochel. Eve tells him, no, we eat from the fruits of the tree. The trees in this garden. But there's the fruit of that tree over there in the middle of the garden. There's one tree. God said, don't eat and don't touch it because you'll die if you do. So what does the Nachash answer her? The Nachash says, Ki yodea Elohim. You know, I'll tell you the truth. God knows, Ki biyom acholchem imenu, on the day that you eat from that tree, v'yitem ke Elohim yodei tovara, then you'll be like God. You'll know everything. You'll know good, you'll know bad. And you know what? God kept to himself the best tree. He lets you eat everything else, but I'm telling you, the really worthwhile you don't have. Okay, where was Chava before the conversation with the snake? Where is Chava after the conversation with the snake? Beforehand, she says, life is good. I have everything. God gave me a whole garden. Afterwards, she says, oh, what's really good I don't have. What I don't have is what's really good. What's really good, I don't have. What I don't have is what's really good. What's really good is what I don't have. What I don't have, that's what's good. In other words, what I do have is not good enough. And here we start seeing the connection between the tree and Chava and Haman, where Chazal said, where do we see Haman in the Torah? They said, the tree reflects Haman. Because Haman had everything. I don't know if there was in world history someone else that had what Haman had. So the Gemara in Sota tells us there were people who were extraordinary. The Nachash back in the Garden of Eden was extraordinary. The smartest creature. He could even outsmart man. Very, very smart. But he wanted something he didn't have. He wanted the woman. So because he wanted more than he was entitled to, he lost everything he had. He was supposed to have a special relationship with man and woman. He was supposed to be man's assistant. No other animal was supposed to be that. But the Nachash was supposed to be that. But he wanted something that was out of his range. It's not yours. It's not for you. It's someone else's wife. But he wanted it. He saw Adam and Eve being intimate and he said, I want to do that too. So Nachash wanted something that wasn't his. Korach, it says, was the wealthiest Jew. It says he had 1,000 camels carrying the keys to the storage houses, whatever storage houses he had in the desert, to the chests of treasures he had coming with him in the desert. And he was a very respected Jew, and he was a tzaddik. He carried the Aron. He was one of the people carrying the Aron. He had one of the holiest jobs that existed. But he wanted something that wasn't his, that he wasn't entitled to. He wanted what Moshe and Aaron had. He wanted to be a Kohen Gadol. So I want to be holy. Right, but maybe I'm not supposed to be that holy. Maybe I'm not entitled to that. So if the Nachash can convince Chava of the Nachash's own weakness, what does the Nachash say? I want more. I know I'm the smartest creature here, but I want Eve. I want what's not mine. And if I don't have it, then I can make trouble in order to get it. So in other words, where does unhappiness come from? If you can see Haman, who is unhappy, he has everything physical, including the death of his enemies. But if I'm going to allow myself to look at what I don't have and tell myself that's what's good, what I don't have is what's good, then suddenly what I do have is not good. And that's, in a nutshell, that's the weakness we all have. It's our weakness. I want something else. I want something different than what I have. And very often we're all repeating Haman's statement. We want something very badly, and when we don't get it, then the feeling is nothing's of value. Nothing matters anymore. And this can go to great extremes. The extreme example is Haman, right? The extreme example is Adam and Eve. They have everything taken care of. They're lacking nothing. They were told one thing they can't have. You ever see a child when they get everything but they don't get one thing? You ever see a child? You know how kids can do that? You know? You can spend your whole day giving your kids a wonderful trip, and at the end of the trip, you've already spent a fortune giving them more and more rides. And as you're leaving the amusement park and you've bought them everything under the sun, they see someone starting to sell cotton candy. And you'd get them the cotton candy, but you don't want the car to be all sticky. And one of them has already thrown up, and they ask for cotton candy, and you say, no, we can't do that today. And suddenly all their faces turn sour. And you look at them and you say, guys, I took a day off of work. I slept out here with you. I just sweat bullets. I dealt with you vomiting in my face on the roller coaster ride. And then you asked for a second time. You said this time you wouldn't do it. I went the second time with you and you threw up on me all over again. And then you said that was great. And I don't think it's so great. I did everything you wanted all day. I didn't get you that cotton candy. And now, oh, it's no fun, right? We've all seen the kids do that. We've all been there. But you know what? We're there so many times. There's so many times in our day or in our year that we can be so upset because there's something we want. And we really want it. And it means something to us. And if we can't get it, so what's the value of everything we do have? And the Gemara says a phenomenal line. The Gemara says when a person is not willing to be at peace with what they do have, and they attempt to achieve what they can't have, then they lose what they do have. All of Haman's wealth went to Mordechai. The Nachash no longer has a relationship with mankind. It's a phenomenal concept. Korach's lost. Korach thought he'd get everything. He lost everything. We have to know there's a range of what I'm entitled to. There's a range of what I can accomplish. There are things that are beyond my range. I'm not a Kohen. I'm not a Levi. I can't be a Kohen. I can't be a Levi. Nothing I can do about it. Oh, maybe my daughter will marry a Kohen and I'll have grandkids who are Kohanim. That could be. But I can't. And there are things I can't do. The desire and the drive to try and get things that are beyond what I'm allowed to have, beyond what I could have, is part of a person's own undoing and destruction. So there's this balance. I can be happy when I'm striving productively within the range of what I can accomplish. I enter stress, I enter depression, I enter self-destruction when I attempt to accomplish that which is beyond my capacity, beyond my realm. So we focused on where sadness lies, meaning we now understand where sadness began from. The Nachash decides, I want something that I'm not entitled to. The Nachash convinces Chava that everything she has is not of value because she doesn't have that one very precious tree. And suddenly everything she has isn't worth it. We looked at Haman. We looked at Korach. We see that. But let's take that lesson and now learn from it how to be happy. Meaning, okay, I understand what not. But what yes? How can I shift that back to positive? And here there are a few beautiful tools we can use. Let's begin with Adam and Chava. Let's revisit the Garden of Eden. And let's imagine that I could stand there talking to Chava instead of the snake. If I could tell the snake, leave it, let us talk for a minute. What would I tell Chava? What am I supposed to tell her? Chava's looking and saying, oh, so I'm not allowed to have the good tree. I'm only allowed to have the less good trees. What would we tell Chava? I'm asking you. Guys, tell me. What would you tell her? Give me a convincing argument. What?
Don't mess things up.
Don't mess things up. Don't eat from that tree. How do you convince her? Okay, so Binyamin told us a very important tool. Binyamin, right? Ben or Binyamin? Binyamin told us if you can understand there's a reason, even if I don't know what it is, but there is a reason why I can't have that, so then I can be at peace with the fact that I have this and I don't have that. So that's one tool we could use. And then we could tell ourselves, I can't have it, but there's a reason. I want us to go a step further. Meaning, how can I convince myself? Let me give you a few scenarios, okay? There's a woman who very much wanted to get married, true story. She had a guy who she really liked, and then the guy was killed at war. And they never got married. And so she spent the rest of her life saying that the reason she can't get married is because the guy she wanted to marry is dead. So she can't get married. What are you going to tell her? So she spends the rest of her life, I think she's still alive to the best of my knowledge, she's in her 70s, meaning I haven't kept up with her, right? I don't know. But I heard this story 30 years ago, 28 years ago, saying, she kept saying she can't get married because the guy she wanted to marry is dead. So the tree I want is missing. I can't have the tree I want. So our answer is going to be, there's a reason you can't have that tree. There's a reason you can't. If you wanted to marry her, you can't. There's a reason. Well, I think we have to give her a little bit more than that. I'm saying, I want to take it to practical life. I have a friend who has 9 children. And he kept saying, I want 10. 10 is holiness. 10 is a minion. I want 10. And every time his wife got pregnant, the baby died. Like after the 9th. Like she miscarried, I think, 3 or 4 times. And couldn't. And every time he'd tell me, I don't know why God isn't letting me have 10. I don't know why I can't have a tenth. And finally, doctor said to him, you can't, your wife's body is finished. You got to let her rest. You can't do this. And he was climbing the walls. Like, he kept saying, I got to have a tenth. What do you tell him? I don't think he ever had a tenth. I don't think so. I mean, we moved away. We did. We stopped being neighbors. I haven't kept up. As far as I know, he never had a tenth. What do you tell a person?
Adopt.
How do you make him happy? The guy has a spiritual goal. In his mind, there has to be 10. You're saying 9. I'm saying Chava has the Garden of Eden. I'm saying every one of us has our silly corner in life that if we don't get what we want, we're very frustrated. And sometimes it's not so silly. Sometimes it's a person wanted to marry someone and that person said no. And now, how do I move forward? Wait a second, but what the person I want to marry is not available. Shokach. Toda rava. Shokach. Wow.
9 happy children. And
not only happy children, they're all Talmidei Chachamim, they're all wonderful.
Yeah.
No, so we can look at it. I'm saying, what tool do we give him? Because I want to know what tool he give us. I'm saying, at the end of the day, we can all look at someone else and say, be happy, you have so much blessing in your life. But what tool do we give ourselves so that when we're the dummy, when we're in the driver's seat, when we're the one who's so frustrated because we really wanted to pass that driving test, we really wanted to get that approval for Aliyah, we really wanted to get that promotion, we really wanted to marry that girl, there will be things that have meaning to us in life, and suddenly they don't happen. How do we deal with that forbidden fruit? Yeah.
Maybe we should not always look at the people who are upon us, but maybe we should look to the people that are under us and say, look what I have and what someone don't have.
Very nice. So what you said, it says in Torah Chovat HaLevavot, and we have a Medrash, and Avos Rabbi Nassan says a similar story. It says that Rabbi Akiva was very poor, he and his wife, and they were pretty down. It was hard. They had nothing but hay, and he tried learning Torah, burning the hay at night, and he'd make a lot of smoke, and all they had was the hay they were sleeping in. And then Elio got dressed up and showed up like a pauper and said, my wife just gave birth. We have nothing to warm up the baby with. Can you give us some hay? So they gladly gave him some hay. And then Rabbi Akiva turned to his wife and said, you see, there are people who are worse off than us. We at least have hay. He doesn't even have the hay to warm his baby. And that gave them strength. So we see that sometimes in life, the ability to look at others and say, I have more blessing than them. So that gives us strength. Okay? Kibalti. We had one tool to think, there's a reason why I can't have that. Second tool, to remind ourselves, there are other people who have it really worse than us. Okay, I want more. I think what you guys have said is great. I'm looking, I want us to walk away tonight with real tools for real life to really be able to be happy, to really be able to deal with the challenges life throws at us and be happy.
when we understand that all is in the hand of Hashem and He wants the good for us, that means it's good for us not to get what we desire, and even to say thanks to Hashem for not to get it. But to come with such good words, I know in myself I have to speak to myself like that. But that's the level, to say thank you, I don't get it.
So Chazal tell us that what you just said is true. Says there were 3 people who got hit by Hashem and reacted in 3 different ways. Eov yelled. Aaron was silent. Vayidom Aaron. David sang. David said, Odecha Hashem ki anaftabi. I thank you, Hashem, because you hit me. I thank you, Hashem. So that's a level of a giant. Aaron wasn't there. Eov wasn't there. The ability to say, Hashem, it's all for my good, and I can thank you for it. It's true. I'm just not sure we can expect ourselves to get there if Chazal tell us that Aaron wasn't there and Eov wasn't there and they were giants. So I'm not sure we can expect that of ourselves. So I definitely agree with what you said. I'm saying I see in Chazal the idea you said. I'm looking for something a little bit in between what you said and what Binyamin said. Yes.
How much goes together to either just be the world, to be everything in the world, the plan is to be hopefully to have the beauty that see just other people around living their own life.
And therefore what?
Well, therefore, I guess it just gives you a sense of I guess there's a sense of purpose, and then there's also some appreciation for it. It helps you show that what you might have is more than you. So instead of, oh, I don't have this one yet, oh, I don't have this thing that I was focused on, it's showing, well, there's so many things that are even going into me being able to wake up and walk around with it, or to go out and be able to kill this nice air on it. You can see that there's much more things in the world on a day-to-day basis, which you do have. You have all this around you compared to just this one more materialistic or something that you can focus on. So it just, I think, helps put whatever you're currently focused on that you may not have achieved in perspective.
Okay, so you're saying get a broader perspective. Realize that there are many fruits out there, and through observing the world, have an appreciation that you were granted a lot of sophisticated good stuff. So you wanted to marry Becky, but don't worry, there's a lot of Cheryl and Veronica and Samantha out there, and they're all wonderful people. Yeah, but none of them come close to Becky. And I wanted Becky.
It's so hard to
yeah.
But more the next day, you can think about it.
Life was beautiful with Becky. Life was beautiful with Becky. And now that she's gone. What? I'm saying the sun is not as brighter, for sure. Sure. I'm saying, so I find it hard to see that as a tool that will practically help us when the Becky's gone, when the worthwhile fruit is sitting there in the garden and I can't have it. Yol, I'll get to you in 1 second. I want to mention one tool that I use with myself. If you pay attention to how kids will say it when they're playing their tantrum, so they're going to say something like, "But I want! But I want!" You ever notice how kids do that? But, which means everything you said, I'm not listening to. My focus is me and my want. And I'm ignoring everything I have. So every so often, I play in my mind the voice of a three-year-old doing that tantrum, and I tell myself, that's what you're doing. But I want, right? I just remind myself that I'm being a three-year-old. Every so often, I'm saying there are times where things can be frustrating. You wanted that deal. You know, and this can be, like one guy told me, I bought a stock. It went up. I could have made $30,000. I could have sat and learned the next 3 years. And then I didn't sell. And then it crashed. And now what does God want me to do? Continue this low-paying job? In other words, but I wanted a different outcome. And it's not there. I'm not getting it. Had I gotten it, things would have been all perfect. If only I'd have that fruit, but I don't. So sometimes it's good to remind ourselves that we're being babyish. We're being babyish, yeah. Saying that's also a tool. But yes.
Rabbi, I was just thinking about what you're teaching. It reminds me a little bit of what's written in Mesilat Yesharim about humility. Because Rav Lazata talks about how when people have certain characteristics and work on them, they'll feel humble, and it will give them a good feeling inside. And it also reminds me of self-reflection, because when people can't self-reflect, they don't see what they have already, and they don't always take responsibility for what they have.
Oh, so you said so many key points. Let's work on each of them, okay? But before we continue, do you guys mind offering the French department and the other guys back there some ragalach?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't think everyone else got so.
Rabbi, in this week's Torah portion, we learned about the Mishkan and how it has inner levels. You know, our soul is...
Wait, I just want to write down, you said so many points. Can I borrow your pen? And maybe I'll take that right. There are a bunch of points you said I want to go back to. Perfect. Thank you very much. Now this is perfect. Okay. Remind me what you said again. Said Ramchal spoke about humility.
It's one of the later chapters. He talks about how when people have these characteristics, he describes them, the way they sit, the way they walk, how when they finally get this, that they will become humble, and the humility leads to a sort of inner feeling. And then I mentioned about self-reflection, which I got from my sister, who's a psychologist. She talks about people not always happy with what they have. It's because they don't always look back and see what they've achieved already, or they don't quite self-reflect on the things they've done. And you get people who complain about their life. They don't see that they've achieved this, they've been there, that they have this. They think that what they have is never enough. I connected it to the Torah portion because the Mishkan has many inner levels, and then we have the Neshama, which is what Hashem breathes into us, which we thank him for every morning. I connect that to Mesilat Yesharim and the inequality that they work to get.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Thank you. Yes, sir.
I believe, like Abel said, the most important thing is to be thankful. Just thankful. Because sometimes we, like when we ask something from you and you don't get it, and he believes you don't love him, but you know better what's good for him as a father than he is. So we have the same situation with Hashem. We know better what we need in ourselves.
Okay, so you're touching on this is what I want to maybe define what you're saying, which really goes back to what Binyamin is saying, which is there's a reason why I'm not allowed to have that fruit. We'll begin with a story, which makes it really simple, and then we'll see the application in our lives. Mother was making Shabbos, things were hectic, she didn't have time. a little girl comes and says, "Mommy, mommy, my doll's hand is broken. Mommy, mommy, can you come fix my doll's hand?" And the mother says, "I can't right now," and this happens again and a third time. Finally, the mother says, "Go daven to Hashem." And half hour later, the mother thinks back, "Oh boy, what did I say? Wait a second." She goes looking for the kid, and the kid's playing with her toys. So she asks the girl, "What happened?" So the girl says, "Well, you told me to go daven to Hashem." The mother says, "Yeah, okay, so what'd you do?" So she says, "I went and davened." And the mother says, "And what happened to the doll?" So the girl looks at her and says, "Hashem said no. Hashem said no." Can we live with the fact that Hashem said no? Meaning she was okay with it. I davened, and obviously Hashem said no, because he's not fixing my doll. So she went to play. So we have to, how can I live with the Hashem said no? Mm-hmm. And that goes back to what you said. My teenager was leaving the house last night. He's dressed in black. I said to him, "You know, cars can't see you." So he says, "I got to go to Meirith." And I say, "Let me give you a reflector." He says, "No, I got to go." Because no one else carries a reflector in Israel. Lakewood, everyone wears a reflector. In Israel, no one wears a reflector. So I said, "You don't have to wear it, but I want you to carry it. I don't want you. I have to go, Abba." I said, "No, cars can't see you. Abba, I have to go." I said, "Here's the reflector. I have to go." So he feels weird carrying it. I'm the bad Abba. I'm telling him to carry a reflector. Dressed in black, I know. Cars can't see you. So I give him the reflector and I said, "Please hold the reflector as you go. I don't need it." I said, "Right, you're doing it for the cars. You're not doing it for you." He says, "Abba, I'm okay." "No, please take the reflector and go." So he takes it. And as he's going, I can see there's a tear in his eye. He feels like he's really upset. Why did I make him take that reflector? In his mind, I did something completely unreasonable. Other kids walk around dressed in black and they make it safely home. And why did my father make me take that reflector? So I'm a terrible father, okay? And as he leaves, I'm standing there thinking, I didn't do wrong.
No.
He doesn't understand that cars don't see him. He's walking on streets where there's no sidewalk. He needs a reflector. But he doesn't see that. And I stood there at the door thinking, how many times are we that kid? How many times are we on a path where Hashem is saying, "Take that reflector," and we're like, "Leave me alone, I'm fine." And at the end of the day, this goes back to the fundamental point you were touching on, which is the idea that Hashem has it thought out. And I agree that this can give a person a tremendous sense of peace. And the more a person connects to the concept, the more strength they have to be at peace. if I can see that everything Hashem does is with a purpose, so then I can understand when there are babies in the mortar wailing to death. Moshe Rabbeinu saw it and he said, "Rabbon Shalom, why are you letting this happen?" That means even on Moshe Rabbeinu's level, he had a hard time in the application. Moshe Rabbeinu said, "I'm telling you, it's in their interest and the world's interest. But you can prove it. Take one out and see what happens with him. See what happens." So there is always that question which deserves a separate class, which is, God could have created a world without pain. And he saw fit to create a world with pain. That's a separate question. It's a different question. But if we can connect to the idea that Hashem has a plan, there is a reason. And it all makes sense, even though I don't understand it. Again, it's important to be honest. I don't understand it. Then I can be at peace. And that is a precursor to happiness. I think these are different components. The ability, like you said, to have self-perception. You said to be thankful. But I think that being thankful doesn't begin the day there are problems. I think that being thankful is a perspective on life. It shocked me. I have two people. One who is not learned at all. He's really I mean, he asked me questions, and I see from his questions that he obviously never got to learn too much Torah, because his questions are on the most basic level. I know I'm not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur, but can I take a sip every so often when I'm thirsty? Right? Very basic. But what's interesting is that whenever I ask him, how are you doing? So he always gives me the same answer. Tutim. So I learned from him that there's a song where they say, life is a bunch of strawberries. Tutim. So from that song, there's developed this slang that if you want to say life is great, you say tutim, you say strawberries. How are you doing? Strawberries. It's another way of saying life is great. And every time I ask him, how are you doing? He always smiles and says, tutim. So meeting him, I would have thought that life is great, right? Everything's wonderful. So one day we sat down to talk, and I started hearing about all the problems he's been dealing with the last year. And I'm sitting there, and as the conversation is going on, I'm thinking, tutim, really? Oh, but I saw that his approach to life in everything that happened, and he's describing to me an accident in which he almost got killed, and he's describing to me a whole bunch of really difficult things that happened to him that year, and I see that his approach is always two things. One, the Ribono Shel Olam. And he's always talking and viewing things from that perspective. Did God put me here for this? Did God put me here for that? He's always thinking in terms of what's God's plan in this whole thing. What role am I supposed to play in God's overall plan and what's happening here? So then I began understanding the baseline from which he could always say tutim. And the other thing is that he was very, very cognizant of his blessings. And that's, again, a perspective that's a daily perspective we choose. Every day. Every day. And I'll give you a simple example. We open our eyes. It's the morning. What's our first thought? Oh, no, I'm late. Oh, no, my nose is stuffed. Oh, no, I have a headache. Meaning, when we wake up, the first thing we're cognizant of is what's wrong. Right? You open your eyes. Now you know what's wrong. Erev Tov Sarel, this yummy stuff here. Make him his own us. So a person, it's very natural that the first thing that a person does when they open their eyes is kvetch. Oh no, I don't have strength to get up this morning. Right? First thing in the morning, you wake up, you look at the alarm clock and you say, I'm not going to have time to shower today. I'm running late. Late to shul again. There are a million things to kvetch about when you open your eyes. Chazal tell us, you open your eyes, modeh, you don't begin with ani. And this goes back to another point, which I loved what you said, you spoke about humility. There's a point of self-pity and self-centeredness that is at the core of depression. At the root of the ability of a person to be sad is the focus on self. If I am focused on others, if I am not the most important person in the world, then I'm going to be happy. Because if I'm the most important person in the world, then when something annoys me, that's someone I can have everything, but if he doesn't move when I walk out of the palace, so then things are terrible. Why are things terrible, Mr. Haman? Everyone else can see that things are great for you, but I can't, because I am very important to me. And that brings us to a second tool that I use with myself. And that's another line, which goes like this. But I want, remember that line? But the focus here is the I. Whenever I see myself getting upset, I try to make that voice go in my mind and I tell myself, ah, you think you're so important, right? But I want. The I is center stage here. I want, and I'm not getting what I want, so I feel entitled to be upset. But wait a second. Everything's beautiful in the world. There are wonderful things going on in the world. But if in this moment this thing is annoying me, so then I feel entitled to be upset. And that goes back to what you said about self-perception and humility. If I look at the world and I say, I have important things to accomplish in this life. there's God, there's a whole world out there. That goes back to what Binyamin said. You see the traffic, I every so often I stand at a traffic light, I'm waiting to cross, and I watch the cars just to see the people passing by. And I remind myself, each of them is a whole planet. Each of them has a whole world, a father, a mother, a sister, a brother, their problems, their jobs. You look at the people in the cars and you just look at them. They have their whole world, and it's very important to them. And then you stand there and you wonder, is it important to me? What difference does it make to me, their world? Can I care about them? I don't know them. Ah, so wait a second. If I'm so impersonal, I don't care about his troubles. Why do I care about mine? It's not for any altruistic reason. It's just because it affects me. Ah, so it's all about being egotistical. It's not. There's no altruism in it. We sometimes we kid ourselves. I have to fend for myself. No one else will. I have important things to accomplish in this world. There are really good reasons why I'm farce. The truth is, I care because it's me. That's all. And I feel for me. And that's legitimate, but I have to recognize it. Ah, but the more I can be involved with the world, the more I can do things of value, the more I care about other people, the more I see there's what to be happy about. If right, what happens, and this is what you both brought up, we become very focused on something. It can be a girl we want to marry. It can be a child a person wants to have. It can be a job a person wants to get employed or accomplish. It can be a deal a person wants to cut. We become very, very focused. And suddenly, that's the only thing that matters. And when we don't get that, then we become Haman number two. Suddenly, everything we have doesn't count. It doesn't matter. You can see. You can hear. You have a family. You have health. You have mental health. You can function. I have a neighbor that spent much of his life in a mental hospital. The guy literally... I feel bad for the guy. We're not in a hospital. We can function. We can. We have this gift. And again, do we see it? No. Ah, so then I could be upset. So we spoke about desiring things that are beyond our capacity to attain. We spoke about the idea of humility, the idea of Hashem watching over the world, and seeing on a daily basis, if my day begins with the modeh, the thanks, so then my day begins with happiness. If I can open my eyes and say, thank God, things are great. Okay, story time. Man and his wife are having a vicious argument, and he's seething as he falls asleep, and she's upset and he's upset, and he hits the sack, and as he's sleeping his mind wanders and he starts having a dream, and suddenly his wife appears as the Wicked Witch of the West. And his wife appears coming out of the clouds. I'm going to beat you. And he looks at her. And all her hair has fallen out. And she's looking at him. And her eyes grow real big. And she smiles a wicked smile. And she's missing half her teeth. And she picks up a bat and she says, I'm coming after you. And he looks at her and he says, what happened? You were such a nice person. And she says, those days are over. And he looks at her and she's wearing shorts and a t-shirt that says, I will kill you. And he starts running and he says, what are you doing? Wait a second, we're trying to build a marriage. What's wrong with you? And he's running and he's running and he's out of breath. And he looks back and she's laughing, cackling, running after him. And then he wakes up and he looks and his wife's there and she has hair on her head. And he looks at her and he says, oh, that's so nice that you have hair on your head. You know, he's half asleep. And he thinks back to his dream and he looks at her and suddenly realizes it was a dream. Oh, wow. And he catches his breath and he looks at her and he smiles. Wow, it's so nice. She's not carrying a baseball bat. And she probably has all those teeth in her mouth. And you know what? When he wakes up and she's not wearing So wait a second. This is a true story. I changed some of the facts. I heard it from the person himself. The guy says to me, the Ribbono Shel Olam made me the biggest favor in the world by giving me that dream. I could wake up in the morning and be happy. Buddy, what just happened? Why were you so happy? What happened? Ah, you came to a realization that maybe things are not so bad. Maybe things are actually pretty good. But when we wake up in the morning, does our Modeh Ani say, I'm alive, I can breathe. So that, if we work with the baseline of, I can be in peace because I'm in Hashem's hands. I can be at peace because I can see my accomplishments. And that's another big thing that we sometimes miss out on. I can be at peace. And there's one more point which can bring us tremendous happiness, but it takes time. So there's a point we touched on that needs to be just focused on, and that is, can I see value in what I'm doing? Meaning a person feels happiness when they see value. And that's one of the reasons that the Western world today is finding itself very much depressed, because there's no real value. If value is I have the newest iPhone, if value is I've accomplished, I've earned the most money, then that's not value. If value is people look at me and they value me and they idolize me, that's not value. What did Marilyn Monroe write when she committed suicide? I now realize I will never find happiness. Because she says, I made it to the top and I'm still not happy, so where does happiness, where can I find happiness? Well, you were climbing the wrong ladder. Right? If that's the ladder, then you're right. Then I made it to the top and there's no pot of gold. Here I am. Everyone else thinks I should be happy. I'm not happy. You see that throughout Hollywood, right? How many people commit suicide because they made it to the top and it's not there. I'm not happy. Ah. But if there's real value, then I could be happy. I don't have to be famous or wealthy. I have to have real value. If I get up in the morning and I say, great, I'm doing something of importance, then I can be happy. Now, let's take this to practical applications. And I'm telling you something I do for myself. Your child fills a diaper. Go change the diaper. Can you say, I'm going to do a mitzvah. I'm going to do something great. I'm going to change a diaper. If you can, you'll be happier changing the diaper. But if you think, I do a mitzvah when I go out and help the old lady cross the street. But when I change the diaper, I'm dealing with something stinky. No, okay, I'm changing the diaper. So then it doesn't feel so great. If you feel that way. But you have to remind yourself that. You're about to call your parents and it's going to be a very annoying conversation. They're going to get on your nerves. No, so what other nonsense did you learn this week? If you can tell yourself, keep it of aim. Okay, I'm doing one of the big ten, one of the Ten Commandments. Let's go call my parents. Okay, you get yourself psyched up, and then throughout the conversation where you're careful to get it right, to end the conversation and they're happy, you had a nice conversation. Yeah, I scored.
It's like almost... Yeah, something a little bordering on cynical.
It's not. It's real. It's. Can I see value in what I'm doing? Sometimes you have to. Sometimes you want to make them happy. Talk to them. Sometimes you don't feel like talking to them. What am I going to tell them? But that'll make them happy. I'm not saying always. But sometimes, yeah. You have to do it with your kids. You're going to come home and say, hi, how was your day? And they'll say, okay. End the conversation. Abba, can you buy me a car? They're on to the next topic. You want to know what was going on in school? You better talk to them. Abba, are you getting me a bike? When did we talk about a bike? What's wrong with your old bike? Oh, you didn't hear I was in an accident? No, when were you in an accident? Well, if every day you came home, then how was your day? Okay, then you'll never hear about the accident. So, again, when I see value, when I can see the value, then life's more exciting. and this has phenomenal applications. Phenomenal. I saw a very, very old man living by his grandson, and every day his great-grandchildren would play all around him, and he would flourish. You'd see him. This is a man, I don't know, in his 90s, and his great-grandchildren would be playing all around him all the time, and he'd sit there in the garden watching them, and it was his life. But you know what? It was very hard on his grandson's wife, on the daughter-in-law. So, meaning the granddaughter-in-law. You know, she's having an old man in her house, and it's hard. So she handled it for a year. She handled it for 2 years. She handled it, I think, for 10 years, which is tremendous. I mean, and then after about 10 or 12 years, maybe a little more, she said, I don't have strength to continue. We should move him to an old age home. And within 6 months, the man went, boom. He went from being a flourishing, happy old man to being basically almost a vegetable, meaning he had nothing to wake up in the morning for. He'd wake up and see his great-grandchildren, that made him live. Now, I don't know if any of us would have lasted 12 years. It's easy to look at that story and say, what a bad granddaughter-in-law. I don't know if we could have handled it for a year. You know, it's very amazing. But I also think that part of the key to her ability to continue was to see the value in what she was doing. Did she see every day, I'm giving him life? And this goes to every mitzvah we do. Every time we have a mitzvah in front of us, if we can see the value in it, then we can invest in it. We can be happy doing it. And then all of our day is happy. And there are small examples of that. You run to Shacharis. What'd you just do? I put myself all out for God. No, you didn't. Did you do something of value? Every mitzvah we do, if we see it, we'll be happier, we'll be excited of doing it, and we'll have energy to do it. Can we be high energy? So, let's recap what we discussed so far. There's a lot more to discuss, but I don't want to continue on this point much longer. We've covered enough for one night. What did we discuss so far? Haman. All the wealth in the world, but if I don't have one thing, I can be super upset. All of life is worthless. Now we understand the psychology of Haman. It's all about me, and there's no real value. What else did we discuss?
Haman in the Torah.
Haman in the Torah.
Where you find
one tree I don't have, then I don't have anything, right? And that's, we're all that way. How do we overcome it? We discussed a number of tools. What did we discuss? What do we discuss? Attitude. We discuss the idea of recognizing that there's a rhyme and reason even if I don't know what it is. The idea that Hashem is running the world and not me. What else did we discuss?
Focusing on what you don't have, but what you have.
Focusing on what I have on a daily basis. Then I can be happy. There's so much I have. I have so many reasons to be happy. Focusing on value. Seeing the value in what I do and doing things that involve other people. Recognizing that depression is rooted in egocentrism. It's because I am very important to me, and that's why if I am unhappy, then it can escalate because it's me. Isn't that important? So it's important, but it shouldn't be so important. Other people should be more important, or at least as important, or very important. And if they're very important, then their happiness is also happiness for me. There's a story I heard, I don't understand it, but it's still a story worth repeating. There was a Rebbetzin whose husband was in the emergency room being operated on, and they lost him. So her husband, a big Talmud Chacham, passed away, and the doctor comes out to the Rebbetzin, and he stands there, not sure how to talk to her. So he's a very nice doctor, and he comes over, and he tries to break the news, and he says, Rebbetzin, I'm not sure things are going to turn out so well. Things are not going so well in there. And finally, he breaks the news there, we lost him. He's gone. So the Rebbetzin looks at him and says, that must have been so hard for you to tell me. I'm sorry you had to do that. How can you be such a person? She's at her hardest moment and she cares for the other person. We on our best day, does anyone else exist? She's on her worst day and she's thinking about the other person. It's a phenomenal level. It's something to think about. And again, this goes back to that little key of but I want. But everything I have is not of value. But I, my focus is I, want what I don't have. I'm looking at what I don't have. Those are the three keys to why we are unhappy. And when we can start saying, yes, I do have, and see the value in what I have, then I can be very happy. But it involves looking at something else, not just the physical, but also the value of our life and Hashem in our life. And that's a point which we haven't gotten to develop, but there is a point of happiness with the connection to Hashem. And at the root of everything we said, there's a higher level, which we didn't get to discuss tonight, which is that what's really happening when we're focused on ourselves is that we're distancing ourselves from Hashem, and that's where we become sad. And what's really happening when we look at real value in other people is that we're coming closer to real value, to connection to Hashem. And this connects to another point which we won't have time to develop tonight, which is that death is at the root of sadness. Finite is at the root of sadness. The idea that no pleasure lasts forever is at the root of sadness. And at the root of happiness is infinite. And when a person connects to value and to mitzvos and to the Ribbono Shel Olam, a person connects to the idea that I'm connecting to the infinite. I will not end because my good actions won't end. And so then I can continue being happy because I don't have to feel like every game has an end. Every thrill has an end. Every day has a night. Everything comes to an end. Not true. Goodness does not come to an end. And I don't come to an end. I connect to the infinite. And that goes back to the Garden of Eden. And a lot of it is in our perception and our perspective. If we can get our perspective tainted, where Hashem's the problem and my desire is the solution, so then I'm bringing myself down to sadness. If my desire is the problem and Hashem is the solution, then I can be very happy. But these are concepts which we did not expand on. These are the continuation of what we already discussed tonight. So we had a starting class on happiness. We started.